In the early 60s, Calvin Trillin got his start as a journalist covering the civil rights movement in the South, first for Time magazine and later for The New Yorker. The people he met in these cities, the critical events he covered, and the changes he saw made or blocked would affect him deeply for the next 50 years. Trillin would return to stories about race, racism, and segregation across the entire country. Now, for the first time, the best of Trillin's pieces on race in America have been collected in one volume. It's entitled Jackson 1964 and Other Dispatches from 50 Years of Reporting on Race in America. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Calvin Trillin to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, Bud. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
This is your 30th book. Is that true?
I'm afraid so, yes.
When you look at this particular one of how it came about, it was suggested to you that you collect these works.
Yeah, I thought the era of collections probably over in American publishing, but I visited a class for the last few years. I've visited a history class at NYU taught by a historian who used to teach at the University of Georgia and specializes in civil rights and race relations. He suggested that I put together pieces for a book. I didn't think there were that many pieces, but then I counted up and there were, I don't know, 35 or so. So we picked some and put a book together.
So you did have quite a bit to choose from, and we begin in 1964, but I think the last essay is from 2008. So it's quite a time period.
Yeah, and actually my reporting goes back before then, because I started writing about this when I was with Time magazine and the Atlanta Bureau in 1960. There's nothing in there from that period. There's some references to it, but in Time in those days was sort of group journalism, so I had a file and somebody else whittled it down and that sort of thing. So these are just New Yorker pieces.
What brought you from Kansas City to Atlanta?
Well, I had a temporary job with Time after college, and then I was in the Army when I went back to see if there was anything open there. There happened to be an opening in the Atlanta Bureau. The person who hired me, the head of the bureaus, said I was the first person who ever wanted to go there. It's hard to remember now, but the civil rights story went on plateaus because there wasn't a really serious push from Washington. So for sometimes a couple of years passed when nothing happened. I guess that's why people weren't that happy about being assigned to the Atlanta Bureau. For instance, from the Montgomery bus boycott in the late 50s till the first sit-in in February of 1960, pretty much nothing happened that was of interest to a national news magazine. But I happened to be there at a time when a lot happened. So it sort of hooked me on reporting. I guess I was young enough that I was not absolutely certain still that that's what I wanted to do.
Because it was so tumultuous and you were seeing something that really wasn't being fully understood by the country as a whole, did it change you? Did it change you in being there and seeing the sit-ins and the boycotts and seeing the action that was taking place?
I certainly could had a more nuanced view of it. After being in there, I was the second person in the bureau, and I was young, and the bureau chief had three or four children and liked to stay home with them. So I was the one who, I couldn't understand why he didn't want to go get chased by people with clubs and was staying home, but it seemed like an opportunity for me. Mm-hmm. So it changed me in that I thought that I saw things in a different way than just the right and wrong, and this is wicked and this isn't wicked. And in those days, there wasn't much coverage of sort of what was going on within the black movement. At that time, the story was shifting from being a white-driven story what will the businessmen do about the lunch counters? What will the leaders of the city do about the school desegregation order? Those were all really white stories into a black story. Where will the sit-ins happen next? What's going on in Mississippi with the voter registration? So it changed my perspective a little bit.
That is where the book begins. The title piece is Jackson 1964, and in the piece you write about that voter registration drive. It was groundbreaking, known as the Mississippi Summer Project. What led you to Jackson?
I had come to the New Yorker a couple of years before, or a year or so before, and my first piece was about the desegregation of the University of Georgia. That's not in this book because it's book length itself. I think William Shawn, who was then the editor of the New Yorker, when the Summer Project happened, wanted somebody to go down there. And he wasn't like a old-fashioned city editor who said, all right, Trillin, get down a thing. But he suggested I might want to go, which I did. And I was familiar with the people involved already from my time in Atlanta or in the Atlanta Bureau. And it was a sort of a seminal event, the Summer Project, because up until then the strategy had been to chip away at segregation by going to the places where there was more chance of some moderate response, Nashville, for instance, or Atlanta. This was an idea of doing the most unassailable thing, which is registering to vote in the most difficult place. It was generally thought of Mississippi as the hardest nut to crack. Nina Simone had a famous song, and it's called Mississippi Goddamn. I remember one of the 50th anniversary commemorations of the Freedom Ride, somebody said to me, who would have thought that when we were in Mississippi in 1961 that we would have had a black president? And I said, in Mississippi in 1961, I would have settled for a black policeman. It was a hard place. But partly through the vision of a man named Robert Moses, the Mississippi Summer Project sort of changed the thrust of the movement. Also brought in for the first time hundreds of white kids, college kids mainly, from the North who were willing to help. And part of the project was not simply to register voters. I think I said in the piece the easiest way to misunderstand it is to think that its sole aim is to register voters, right, but to direct the nation's attention to Mississippi. And you do that basically by the presence of white people. There's a line in that piece that was written in 1964 that said, it doesn't take a sophisticated survey of public opinion to establish the fact that in America, North and South, a white life is considered to be of more value than a black life. So having those kids come down and putting themselves in danger, really, they were terribly brave. There was a lot of dark humor in the movement, and one of the jokes was that one of the volunteers, after being trained in Ohio, the night before he was to leave for Mississippi, got down on his knees next to his bed and said, God, will you be with me in Mississippi? And there was a voice from above that said, I'll go as far as Memphis, because Mississippi was considered a little too hard even for God.
Mm. How were you treated? What was the reaction to you reporting these stories at the time?
Well, in the South, and a lot of the book had stories from all over, from Seattle and from Long Island and Boston and Oshkosh, Wisconsin. But in the South, I think we were still in the era when your views on race were thought to be tied to your geography. So somebody from the South was thought of as having, of course, white supremacist views, segregationist views, but it wasn't considered a disabling characteristic. It was sort of like oh, well, it's too bad. It's sort of like bragging among Texans or something like that. Somebody from the North was assumed to be opposed to that sort of thing. So the first question a reporter got when he came into some encounter with a deputy sheriff was, where are you from? I'm from Missouri, which not as bad as being from New York, but wasn't particularly good. So there was some hostility and some sort of over-politeness that was almost as unnerving as the hostility. When I did stories in Mississippi, I often used to file them, depending on which part of the state I was in, from Memphis or from New Orleans. And I would say to my office when I checked in, when I got there, I've slipped over the border, because it seemed like almost a foreign country.
With that said, though, the people that you were covering, you seemed to have a rapport, and they were very willing to talk to you.
I think most people were, even the strong segregationists. I mean, they knew they were going to be accurately quoted, or I hope they knew that, and that I actually did want to hear what they had to say. The people in the movement were cooperative because they needed a megaphone. I mean, they needed the story to get out. So that somebody at some point would do something about it.
As time went on and you would continue to write about race, as we see these pieces that are included in the book, do you think your reporting comes from those early experiences of having those experiences of being in the South during this very crucial time?
Yeah, I think a lot of what I learned in the South was hard to keep out of my mind. And I think always I was aware of the sort of code words and that indicated some sort of racist feeling. And also I realized that I was never totally certain that everything was just going to change. I mean, Jackson, when I was there for a 50th anniversary Freedom Ride commemoration, Jackson had a black police chief and a black mayor. On the other hand, as soon as the Supreme Court knocked out the most important part of the civil rights law, that you had to check changes in voting procedures with the Justice Department, Mississippi passed a law that for voter ID that basically did the same thing as used to be done by intimidation.
When you look at these pieces as a collection, what do you hope people get out of reading them?
Well, I hope there are snapshots of where we were at various times in all of this. I mean, we've obviously been a long history that's not over yet. But I hope it indicates to people how far we've come and how far we haven't come.
Well, the name of the book is Jackson 1964 and Other Dispatches from 50 Years of Reporting on Race in America. It is published by Random House. Calvin Trillin is the author, but it's always great to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. Nice to be here.
Thank you. Again, Calvin Trillin's new book is Jackson 1964. It's published by Random House. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.